Translation. When the Lord displayed his activities just suitable for childhood, he was visible only to the residents of Vrindavan. Sometimes he would cry and sometimes laugh, just like a child. And while so doing, he would appear like a lion cub. Purport given by His Divine Grace Srila Prabhupada Ki. If anyone wants to enjoy the childhood pastimes of the Lord, then he has to follow in the footsteps of the residents of Raj, like Nanda, Upananda, and other parental inhabitants. A child may insist on having something and cry like anything to get it, disturbing the whole neighborhood, and then immediately after achieving the desired thing, he laughs. Such crying and laughing is enjoyable to the parents and elderly members of the family. So the Lord would simultaneously cry and laugh in this way and merge his devotee parents in the humor of transcendental pleasure. These incidents are enjoyable only by the residents of Raj, like Nanda Maharaj, and not by the impersonalist worshippers of Brahman or Paramatma. Sometimes, when attacked in the forest by demons, Krishna would appear struck with wonder, but he looked on them like the cub of a lion and killed them. His childhood companions would also be struck with wonder, and when they came back home, they would narrate the story to their parents, and everyone would appreciate the qualities of their Krishna. Child Krishna did not belong only to his parents, Nanda and Yashoda. He was a son of all the elderly inhabitants of Vrindavan and the friend of all contemporary boys and girls. Everyone loved Krishna. He was the life and soul of everyone, including the animals, the cows, and the calves. Om Jnanata Mirandasya Gananjana Shalakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Guruve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Mano Vishtam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Swapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Uta Padakamalam Shri Gurum Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupam Sagrajatam Sahagana Ragunatam Vitam Tam Sajivam Sadvaitam Savadutam Parijana Sahitam Krishna Chaitanya Devam Shri Radha Krishna Pada Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakam Vitamscha He Krishna Karuna Sindhu Dina Bandhu Jagatpate Gopesha Gopika Kantha Radha Kanta Namastute Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi Radhe Vrindavaneshwari Vrishabhanu Sute Devi Pranamami Hari Priye Vanchakalpatarubhyascha Kripa Sindhu Bhyebacha Patitanam Pavanebhyo Vaishnanebhyo Namo Namaha Jai Sri Krishna Chaitanya Prabhu Nityananda Shri Advaita Gadadhar Srivasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare. Komarim darshayam cheshtam prashaniyam vajokasam rudaniva hasan mugda bala simha valokanaha. When the Lord displayed his activities just suitable for childhood, he was visible only to the residents of Vrindavan. Sometimes he would cry and sometimes laugh, just like a child, and while so doing, he would appear like a lion cub. Okay, Hare Krishna, everyone. So, great privilege to be here. I know it's cliche to say this, I don't feel qualified to be here, actually, but nonetheless, I'm also at the same time full of gratitude that I'm engaged in service. I also want to also seek the blessings of all the Vaishnavas, and make sure that I say things properly. Also, I want to also say, just for those devotees who have been on the marathon, all glories, well done to everyone who's been out there doing books on the streets. And I hope you're all kind of like resting and recovering now. I was with some of the devotees for the last week of the marathon in Manchester. Just that 1 week was like, wow, it's quite rigorous. And they've been doing it for a whole month, so it's like, wow, amazing. So all glories to the Sankirtan effort. Sankirtan Mahayagya ki. Jai. Also, all glories to the devotees who helped in the background by making prasadam and things, and, you know, for the devotees as they went on their missions and things. So amazing, amazing stuff. And actually, that effort that we're doing ultimately is going to culminate in us actually, by Krishna's grace, being here in this scenario that this purport's talking about, where we can actually be with Krishna, frolicking about in Vrindavan, as he's having, you know, these wonderful pastimes with his devotees in Vraj, and laughing and crying and doing all these beautiful things. We know that, you know, when Krishna appears on this earth, you know, he appears for the devotees as well as to annihilate the miscreants, right? You know, paritranaya sadhunam vinashaya cha duskritam dharma samstapanathaya sambhavami yuge yuge. Yes, he appears to establish religion, dharma, all these things, and he's there to also destroy the miscreants. But we also know that, you know, whenever the Lord appears, there's always an internal and an external reason why he appears. And the external reasons are actually inferior to the internal reasons. Because as Prabhupada himself has said many times, he could easily get his agents to come and do a lot of those things for him, right? Like destroying the miscreants, right? I mean, yeah, there are demons, powerful demons, but Krishna has so many like devotees who can come and have done so in the past and just like that destroyed the demons. I mean, you know, I was like, you know, literally a month and a half back, we were just coming up to 2 months now, actually. We were in North India for our School of Bhakti retreat. And we went to all these places. Some of them are directly Krishna-orientated, and some of them are kind of related to Krishna's devotees, like Lord Shiva. And then, you know, he had obviously, you know, like went to like Chandi Dev's temple. So Chandi is an incarnation of Durga, and she destroys like these massive, like, you know, powerful demon like Mahishasur. For those of you know about, you know, from Vedic background or, you know, a lot of these kind of Puranic pastimes, you'll know that, you know, these were incredible demons, and Durga Devi, as Chandi Devi, she destroyed them like Mahishasur. Rakta Beej is this formidable personality, right? You kill him and each drop of blood that drops on the floor, another Rakta Beej comes out. Like, he multiplies. Every time you try and kill him, he multiplies more and more. Anyway, and then we like, so we went to this part, and of course we went to Lord Shiva's pastimes in Kedarnath and things like that. And, you know, I mean, gosh, I mean, the pastimes where he's destroyed so many demons, you know. So Krishna doesn't need to do these things himself. He's got his devotees to do them. Even like reestablishing dharma, Krishna sends his devotees often to do that. Krishna sent Lord Shiva to come down as Shankaracharya to bring the people of society back to the Vedic fold. Albeit in an impersonalistic manner, but still, it was some element of dharma needed at that time, right? So he can do all those things. But the internal reason, of course, as we know, is that he comes for the pleasure of his devotees. And this is actually beautiful, because in these verses, we can see that this is actually what Krishna's real internal mood is coming through. That he's coming for his devotees to give them some pleasure, to give them some love, to almost like show them that I'm here, I'm with you guys. And it's almost like for us it's an aspiration of what we can then aspire to delve into when we do go, you know, back home, back to Godhead. Yesterday, Shyamananda Prabhu, he mentioned a beautiful verse, and I thought it's quite relevant because this verse is actually the... you could say it's the raison d'etre of what is Krishna consciousness. So if you remember, I know there's a bit of debate yesterday as to who wrote this. Was it Srinath Chakravarti or Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur? Again, like what Kesha Maharaj said, I also consulted Kartik Chandra Prabhu on this. He also confirmed for me it was actually Srinath Chakravarti Thakur from the Chaitanya Manjusa. So it goes like this. Aradhyo Bhagavan Vraje Satanayas Tadhama Vrindavanam Ramya Kachitu Pasana Vrajavadu Vargena Vakalpita Srimad Bhagavatam Pramanam Amalam Prema Pumartho Mahan Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Matamidam tatra darana para. So the translation is, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Lord Krishna, the son of Nanda Maharaj, is worshipped along with his transcendental abode, Vrindavan. Interesting, Krishna is worshipped along with Vrindavan. We're going to talk about that in a minute, actually. The most pleasing form of worship for the Lord is that which was performed by the gopis of Vrindavan. Srimad Bhagavatam is the spotless authority on everything, and pure love of Godhead is the ultimate goal of life for all men. These statements, for which we have the highest regard, are the opinion of Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Okay, so in this verse, it actually gives you the four aspects of what this whole Krishna consciousness philosophy is about, right? The whole Krishna consciousness. So if anyone wants to know what is it, if you were to summarize Krishna consciousness for yourself or your fellow devotees, or actually for others as well, these are the four key points. The goal of all souls is ultimately love, right? It's the main purpose of the soul. Rupa Goswami mentions the main purpose of the soul is to give love and be loved. That's what we're all looking for in this life, right? In this life and beyond, to give love and be loved. So the ultimate goal is love. The second thing is, who is the object of love? Who is it that we're trying to love? We have a need to love someone, right? Where should we be reposing our love? Any ideas? This is not a trick question. Yes, Krishna. Yes, of course. Krishna. Actually, the verse is even more specific. Krishna, okay, Krishna, yes, Krishna of Vrindavan. Not even Krishna of Mathura or Krishna of Dwarka, but specifically Krishna of Vrindavan. I think that's very telling, especially in relevance to this verse, actually. Okay, so that's who we're trying to love. Who has such a relationship of love with Krishna? Radha and the gopis. So we are they're following in their footsteps, in their mood, right? And how can we learn to develop that love of the gopis that they have for Krishna? By the Bhagavatam, Srimad Bhagavatam Prema Pumartha Mahan, right? So these is the four key things. The ultimate goal for us as Atmas is love. The object of love is Krishna of Vrindavan. We are following in the relationship of love of the gopis that they have for Krishna. Third point. And fourth point, we learn this by following the dictates of the Bhagavatam. Okay? And then when we do that, then we can actually get into Vrindavan. Then we can experience these beautiful pastimes. I mean, there are so many if we look at Krishna book and they talk about Vrindavan, and it's like, it's something out of this world, and everything is like fully cognizant. Like, the water is like proud of the bamboo sticks, because the bamboo sticks are being used to like be Krishna's flutes and are constantly serving Krishna's lips. And then the gopis are getting jealous of this, and the water is proud of the bamboo because the water sees the bamboo as its son, right? Because bamboo grows in water. So the water is bamboo's mother, right? So like, oh, my dear son is serving Krishna all day long, serving his lips like this. Like, this is like, this is some high level rasa, which, we can access when we're ready for it, of course. Now, interesting, in this purport, Prabhupada then goes on to say that these, in the actual verse itself, he was visible only to the residents of Vrindavan. So Krishna in his Komarim, Leela, is only visible to the residents of Vrindavan. Right? So that means it is a very exclusive privilege to be in these Leelas, as we know. There's a certain mood that one has to have. There's a certain qualification one has to have. Is that qualification based on scholarship? No. Is it based on how rich you are? Is it based on how good looking you are? No. What is it based on? Yeah, the bhakti, right? Bhakti mama bijanati, right? So it's through that bhakti that these personalities can actually access this. There are different layers that are covering the dham. And firstly, if you look at Vrindavan itself, there's spiritual Vrindavan, which is in the spiritual world itself. There's Vrindavan that is this manifest on earth, Bhoma Vrindavan. What else are there? There's spiritual Vrindavan, there's Vrindavan manifest on earth. What other types of Vrindavan are there? Any ideas? Okay, Vrindavan as a state of consciousness. Prabhupada said, isn't it, when he was in the Bowery, right? His disciples asked him, Prabhupada, this must be such a big thing. You know, you were in 9 years in Radha Damodar Temple in Samadhi in Vrindavan, and now you're here in the Bowery. And Prabhupada said, no, I'm always in Vrindavan. I'm here in Vrindavan as I speak to you, right? Yes, David? Okay, Vrindavan manifested as by saintly people. So you could say replica Vrindavans, yeah. Okay, so we've got spiritual Vrindavan, Vrindavan manifest on earth, replica Vrindavan, Vrindavan as state of consciousness, and there's a last one. Huh? Vrindavan, I think that comes under state of consciousness. Modern day Vrindavan, that is covered up. Right, so who's been to Vrindavan right now? Okay. When you go to Vrindavan, when you look at external eyes, does it look exactly like what you read in the Krishna book? You know, they talk about Krishna, you know, Vrindavan in autumn, and like all the water lilies are coming out, and like there's all these different, gazillion different types of flowers, like champak flower and kadamba flower, and you know, all these different flowers and different trees. You know, when you go to Vrindavan now, if you look externally, it's like, you know, you might think, okay, it's UP, you know, it's Uttar Pradesh, you know, like India, you know, with everything that India is, you know, with the kiosks and, you know, all the things that's going on in India, right? That's modern day Vrindavan covered up. So Bhaktivinoda Thakur says, Boma Vrindavan is like a beautiful ocean that is covered by oil, right? And this Boma Vrindavan has two potencies, the Taraka Shakti and the Paraka Shakti. The Taraka Shakti is the liberating potency. So when you actually delve into Vrindavan and start doing your sadhana, your tapasya there, obviously, naturally, you'll get liberated. And the Paraka Shakti is the attracting potency towards Krishna. These two Shaktis and the oil that covers it is all orchestrated by Yoga Maya. So that means that first, even to access the Taraka and the Paraka Shakti, we first need to get past this Yoga Maya's layer of oil. That's where our anartha nivritti has to come in. That's where our tapasya, our purification, getting rid of the false ego, our desires, basically the whole kind of like most of our journey in Krishna consciousness is going to basically like, is going through this stage before we can access this high level rasa, right? So it's a special privilege that devotees have. I would even share one more thing actually. Like I said, you know, I was in North India recently, and you know, one of the Matajis on our trip, she made a very nice comment that this retreat was amazing, and it was. And I encourage everyone to come on more of our School of Bhakti retreats, by the way, right? It was amazing. And, you know, we went to all these places, like, you know, this was very much in the northern realms, right? So we went to, like, you know, the Shivalok Himalayan foothills, Kedarnath, Badrinath. They've got, like, even Lord Vishnu deities there with Durga, Badri Vishal, right? You went to like, you know, Pandukeshwar, Ganesh Gufa, Vyas Gufa, where Vyasdev compiled the Bhagatam and the Vedas and things like that. And it's such, like, the landscape, it's everything, it's just stupendous. And, you know, the more you go, the more, you're just going higher and higher. The hills are just getting higher and more steeper. And, you know, it's like, it's quite incredible, right? Like when you think of Himalayas. And it's interesting because the form of Krishna that's there is generally it's Vishnu or Narayan. And it's interesting that the landscape, even on a material level, reflects that. It's a very severe landscape. It's a very, like, majestic, right? It's awe-inspiring just going there, just seeing these temples, like they're humongous temples made of, like, rock and things, you know. Jai Shri Shri Radha Gokulanda Ki. Sitaram Lakshman Hanumanji ki Sisi Gornitai ki jai. So, it is incredible seeing it. But what Vrindavan has though, and I would say even now, when you even look at it from an earthly level, is a sweetness. The form of Krishna that's residing obviously in Vrindavan is sweet, as opposed to the form of Krishna that's in the Himalayas. And you can feel that in the atmosphere, right? Even if you look at the landscape of Vrindavan, even like now, like there are certain places even now in Vrindavan which kind of even resemble what, from an earthly vision, what's written in Krishna book. Like I don't know if anyone's been to Vrindakund and Terakadamba. Like, they, when I go to those places, they are like, well, I'm in Vrindavan. Like, this actually is exactly what I read, like a lot of what I read in Krishna book. And it resembles that, you know? Groves, kind of like, you know, very beautiful and sweet and, you know, gentle and things like that. And one of the Mataji actually said that it's amazing going to these places, but nothing quite comes to the sweetness of when you go to Vrindavan, and also by extension Mayapur as well. So definitely we should go to these other kind of Puranic pastime places, but nothing can actually come to what is actually Vrindavan itself. Okay. Then of course, you know, Prabhupada talks about how Krishna, he gives pledge to all the residents of Vrindavan, and they all, like, you know, see him as their Krishna. So not just Nanda, Upananda, but even the other Vrindavan inhabitants and things, they have pure love for him. Prabhupada often said that the closest thing to spiritual love that we have in the material world is the love that a mother has for their child, right? So naturally, these devotees are in that kind of rasa, especially the parental inhabitants, that they have that kind of love for Krishna as well. And it says that even for the cows and the calves, he was their soul as well. So animals are also Krishna's devotees. We have to understand that, obviously. We know there are many examples. Actually, just last time I was in Vrindavan this year, actually, earlier this year, and this, I heard this pastime, actually, of this Mataji. You know, she was, you know, in Vrindavan you get monkeys, and they often nick stuff and things like that. They steal little glasses and all the rest of it. And there was one Mataji, you know, she was, Antaranga's nodding because he had his glasses stolen recently. I did as well, but I got my glasses back. I had to bribe the monkey. Anyway, 20 rupees. Anyway. So, no, I'm serious. It was actually 20 rupees, you know. Monkey got chapati from it. Anyway, so, but you go there, and, you know, there's a monkey there that actually then actually mugged a Tulsi Devi, like, plant from a Mataji. And the Mataji actually stopped, shocked, and looked at the monkey in the eye and says, "No, you can't. This is Tulsi." Right? And then, was it you, Antaranga? You may have been. Yeah, okay. Okay. Okay, wonderful. There you go. Yeah, so, and then the monkey actually then looked at the Mataji in the eye. This is a monkey, right? And gave the Tulsi Devi back. Like, you know, when the monkey took my glasses, the monkey started chewing on my glasses, right? But with Tulsi, so it's like there's something going on there, you know? We know Bhakti Rasamrita Maharaj was once telling us as well in a Brahmachari class that once he was chanting, he decided to sit down and chant, and the dog came and sat with him for the whole japa time that he was doing his japa, just sitting there and listening. So it's like, okay, what's going on here? So animals are also Krishna's devotees. We know that in the spiritual world. We know it in the pastime. Some of the greatest devotees are animals, actually. We have Hanumanji. We have Jatayu, right? But even on the earthly level, they are also devotees. We have to know that. No wonder Prabhupada said there's a direct correlation between modern warfare and animal killing, because it's causing a lot of sin for which we will get reactions for it. Okay? So, yeah, it's amazing, you know, this Vrindavan, this rasa that Krishna has with his people, the rasa of action. And it's interesting, Prabhupada said that, you know, Krishna looks upon the demons that come for him with wide-eyed wonder, and then he kills them anyway. And then all the other inhabitants are also looking upon them like wide-eyed wonder. I was actually thinking about this because even on a modern level, we love kids' adventures, right? If you look at modern society, if you look at some of the biggest selling books, right, or film, like Harry Potter, right? Or, you know, the back in the day, there used to be Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe. When I was growing up, we used to, like, be, you know, like, learning that. Were you going to say? You know, like, and there are other, all these kind of different adventures with, related with children, right? Children's books, children's adventures, you know, the famous five, you know, adventures of the famous five. Okay, we're going back a bit now in the generations here, but, you know. So, all these things are there. And actually, because they evoke something within us, there's something about seeing life through the eyes of the child, so fresh, so new, so almost like there's a purity, there's an innocence and a purity there. And ultimately, that evokingness is evocation is coming originally from Krishna, and because he's the original child, You know, you have all these, oh yeah, Peter Pan, right? Classic one, Peter Pan. And there's something very like fresh and new about it. You know, Harry Potter, Peter Pan would not work if that was a grown-up guy, right? Let's be honest, okay? But it's because it's a child, it works. Because it's something fresh and wide-eyed. But where's that coming from? It's coming from Krishna. And actually, Krishna's pastimes as a child are actually so pure. And you could almost see that it's probably the least, I say probably, and I say this, you know, with some, you know, with awareness here, that the least affected by the material issues that Krishna then later has to deal with as he progresses through his leelas. Well, like, for example, you know, life is competitive. Life is tough. Life is hard. We know that. We're living in the mature world. His childhood pastimes are something for us to aspire to. It goes beyond the toughness of this life. It's something. It's almost like an escape for us. It is a good escape. That's something that we want to get into. Because, you know, later on, obviously, when Krishna, you know, when he grows up, he then has to deal with the material life. Like the death, the destructions. You can also see that Krishna himself, the way he does his pastimes, all pure, all transcendental, but he has to do a lot of material wranglings, right? We know that Krishna is expert politician. Like the way he suggests to Yudhishthir, tell the truth that you killed Ashwatthama, the elephant, in a diplomatic way. That's such a geopolitical analyst type of thing to say, isn't it? Like a military strategist. It's a very grown-up thing. You're dealing with the mature world now. When he sees Ghatotkach dying in the battle, and he's happy, he's smiling, right? And Bhima gets angry with Krishna, saying, why are you smiling? My son just died. But Krishna's not looking at it from an emotional perspective, like an innocent, naive perspective. He's looking at it from the point of a tactician, a strategist. This is good. This is very good, because Ghatotkach has now disabled Karna from using his Indrastra on Arjun. So this is advantages for us. He's looking at things from a very strategic viewpoint. It's a very grown-up thing. Things that we have to deal with in a day-to-day life. You know, when you're dealing in companies, corporations, businesses, we now have lots of devotees, right? They're going to probably like write, you know, business skills according to the Bhagavad Gita. Or like leadership strategies according to the Mahabharata, right? Grown up, we're in a grown up area now. We're dealing with negatives and positives. But Krishna's childhood pastimes are kind of like, you're not dealing with that. You're as close, identical to the spiritual world as you can get, right? Because you're not dealing with like people trying to kill you and this and that. Or trying to like, you know, get ahead of you. So there's a softness, there's a sweetness to his childhood pastimes. At the same time, there is also that mischievousness as well. They say that, you know, Krishna's pastime, Krishna's character is contradictory. Like you can see here that, you know, he will throw a tantrum and then will cry afterwards. And we enjoy that kind of like that contradiction in his pastimes, which is why there's so many chapters and verses dedicated to Krishna's pastimes in Mahabharata Srimad Bhagavatam. Krishna book itself, as opposed to, let's say, Lord Ram. Lord Ram's pastimes is not even like, I think it's just less than a kanda within the Ramayana, right? Very like quick, and then it goes on as he becomes teen and starts doing his heroic things. It says that Lord Ram's leelas are like a green, unripe mango. Very nice, very effective, but not necessarily sweet. Because it's very straight-laced. It's very dharmic. Krishna's is like a black mango. It's gone beyond ripe. It's oozing because it's like, you know, Krishna's like crooked and he's like does all these crazy things. But it's what we enjoy as well. Especially, you know, like in Kali Yuga, I think it probably resonates with us more. They do say actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's leelas are like the golden mango, which is just right because it's just nourishing and sweet. But you need Chaitanya Mahaprabhu to then bring you to Krishna, to then actually appreciate Krishna's leelas. So, yeah, we can see this, that, you know, there are different, you know, like sort of moods that Krishna has, but these childhood pastimes are some of his sweetest ones. But even to understand this, we need to know the tattva. That's why Krishna Das Kaviraj Goswami said, Siddhanta boliyache, Siddhanta boliyachite nakarala ash, to know the Siddhanta, don't be alash, don't be lazy. Ihalage Krishna hoite shudrudi manas, to know Krishna, you need to strengthen your mind. Right? You need to strengthen mind, you need to do some tapasya. We can see, and I'll finish up here, we can see that even with Vidura, he is now delving in these verses. Vidura is having conversations with Uddhava after being banished from the Kurava kingdom. Vidura himself has to go through his austerity and his tapasya to actually get deeply into Krishna's childhood pastimes. We can have this privilege of learning all this. So for us as well, we have to understand, for us to delve into Krishna's childhood pastimes, we need to go through purification. We need to go through tapasya. When Krishna comes into your life, he will disrupt your life. We have to be ready for that. It's not going to be a smooth thing, right? Even Vidura had to have his life disrupted for him to appreciate what's going on here. So for us, his childhood pastimes are aspirational. There are other childlike devotees, that's the thing. Look at Prahlad Maharaj, look at Dhruva Maharaj. But if you look at their childhood pastimes, they are aspirational themselves as people, as devotees, their qualities. But I'll be honest with you, you're not looking at the Prahlad Maharaj's childhood thing, I want to aspire for that scenario. Because Prahlad Maharaj had to deal with a lot of darkness, you know, he had to deal with abuse and trauma from his father. We could take the lessons from his pastimes is, okay, the need to take shelter from, you know, Krishna to rise above Hiranyakashipu's torture. Dhruva Maharaj was, again, a beautiful devotee, but his pastime's not cute or fun. He's dealing with a lot of, there's vengeance there that he's dealing with. There's a lot of, like, you know, there's an insult. There's stuff going on there, right, with Dhruva Maharaj, with his father and his stepmother and all these things. But with Krishna's ones, it's like, it's perfection. You do want to be there. You do want to be there with Krishna in these childhood pastimes. It's an aspiration. Krishna is someone that we aspire to be with, and his childhood pastimes is something we want to aspire to be part of, and his Vrindavan is the place where we want to aspire to be at, right? And this can only be done by the Lord's mercy. As it says, as Prabhupada said, impersonalists cannot attain this. In person can never attain this. The best they can do is understand that this material world is actually false reality. They have a system called neti neti, where they can dissect things to the most indivisible component by saying neti neti, it's not this, it's not this. No, it can't be this, because this can be broken down, this can be broken down. But they can't actually rise above that to the axis that there's another whole world beyond this analysis of this material world and the, you know, the nihilism of it all. They can't go there unless they get the mercy. How does one get that mercy? By connecting to the Dham, by connecting to the sadhus in the Dham, and by doing our bhakti. My spiritual master, who left this year, he actually mentioned that we should be connecting to the Dham regularly. All devotees should be going to the Dham at least once a year. Particularly, he specifically mentioned Vrindavan, because Vrindavan is a place for condensed devotional service. So, yeah, let us meditate on these things and go forth with our bhakti. And I'll share a little thing. You know, this lady I met on the marathon in Chester. Old lady, must have been in her 80s. You know, I met quite a few mystical people actually on this marathon. You know, people who've done some spiritual things. She was one of those people. You know, you get those people that do some mystical practice. They can read you. They can read, like, you know, like, you know, like these things, they can read people's, like, energies and aura. They can just look at you and they know what you are and stuff. I had that, actually. There's another guy, actually, this West African man I met, you know, who was able to figure things out. Anyway, but this lady, she actually said that, yeah, I know, I've been, she's been associating with, you know, getting spiritual knowledge from this Babaji for many, many decades now. And she knows about, you know, Kali Yuga and, you know, all these things. It's, you know, she's not just a typical English lady on the street. You know, she's done a lot of spiritual realizations. You can see that. And then I gave her, I said that, well, I think these books are for you. I gave her a Bhagavatam and a Bhagavad Gita. And she said that, you know, I met the Hare Krishnas 37 years ago, 36 years ago. I feel after doing all my spiritual practice, I feel that now it's almost like Krishna's opening the doors for me to now go a bit deeper and go into this path. I felt that was a life well lived, because, you know, she's done the impersonalistic route And now it's almost like the doors of Bhakti are opening up for her, you know. So, but obviously, we don't have to wait till we're 80. We can now get into it now as well. Jai. Granthraj Srimad Bhagavatam ki. Jai. Okay, it's time's finished. I think it's breakfast. I don't know if there's any last questions or anything. Otherwise, we can call it. Jai. Srila Prabhupada ki. Jai.